The Stag by Pat Goff. I saw Carl and Stuart taking the beagles across Five Mile Bridge and I'm me way in. Jimmy's voice couldn't contain his excitement, his rotten teeth exposed by his mischievous grin. We were standing around the ESB office in Saggart. Jimmy had a mug of tea in his fat fist and I was mulling over the call slips. We have a job in Lochcarn, I said. Rafferty's. The milking machines are sparking. Maybe we could detour, catch some of the action. I'm sure Rafferty won't mind.
Be Jesus, he can meet! Jimmy's grin left his face. The last time we fixed his well, like, he never asked us to be a mountainous. The meaner...
He's got more on his mind. We're all his fancy Charolais cows, six at the last count, and his new milking parlour.
He's a short memory, Jimmy said. I remember when he came here. The Land Commission saved him and his brood from starvation in Connemara.
Well now, Jimmy, jealousy will get you nowhere.
Jealousy, is it? He'd the arse out of his trousers and not a crust of bread for the brats.
Let's go, Jimmy, I said, stuffing a couple of DZ fuses in my ESB-issued jacket pocket. We'll catch the hunter that morning. We'll... I clammed up. As Mr. Gardner, the area supervisor, entered the office, he looked at his watch.
Are you still here?
He said, gruffly pointing to the door. And give Rafferty your first call. You know he can be trouble. There was no sign of the hunt in the entire townland of Lochcarn. We cruised along the edge of Carling Stewart's estate, eyes peeled for the flash of red tunic across the woods. Every so often, I stopped the van and killed the engine. We stepped out and stood still, listening for the sharp blast of the horn or the fussy barking of the beagles. The woods were silent, apart from the cawing of the crows and corncrake call in the crisp air.
Maybe they swung north at Ashbourne, Jimmy said. Let's cut through the estate. We could cut them off at Sallywood.
What about Rafferty?
Fuck Rafferty, he can wait.
We drove slowly through the estate, stopping at the cattle grids, closing all the gates securely. Pheasants scuttled about in the wet grass as the sun climbed higher in the sky, glinting off the windows of the big house. There was no sign of Carling Stewart himself.
He'll be at the hunt, Jimmy said. He's master of hounds this year.
At Sallywood, the story was the same. Neither hair nor hide of the hunt. A man flagged us down at Beggar's Bend.
You saved me a journey, lads. I was on my way to the post office to phone the ESB. Paddy Reedy's place is in the dark.
That's the cottage just above the crossroads, I said.
No, no, that's Jerry Reedy, his brother. Paddy's beyond the crooked bridge.
On the right.
No, that's Molly Reedy. Jeez, lads. It's the whitewashed two-story house on the left, about 200 yards beyond the graveyard.
Of course, Jimmy knew the old lady. He seemed to know everybody. They danced together when she was a slip of a girl and he was Jack the Lad, if you could believe him. They started talking about old times while I sorted out the fault. It turned out to be a main fuse. Unfortunately, the new fuse blew when I twisted it home, but luckily the house wasn't completely dependent on electricity. Mrs. Reedy, Eileen Keogh as Jimmy called her, had the kettle boiling on the open fire and was preparing tea as I worked.
Don't put yourself to too much trouble, missus. We have a busy day ahead of us.
Jimmy pulled up his chair, removed his cap and prepared to tuck in. Out came the biscuits, bread and jam, freshly churned butter.
You must be run off your feet, God bless you, with all these new houses and all of them wanting electricity.
Is there anything plugged in, Mrs. Reedy? I shouted from the hallway.
No, only an electric blanket.
Your what? I stepped into the kitchen. Mrs. Reedy blushed to her fingertips.
In the name of Jesus, Eileen, Jimmy asked, what would you need an electric blanket for? I got it from a tinker woman outside that cool. It was a bargain. Some of your bones are freezing.
Is there no heat in that old fella yours at all?
Divil a bit,
she laughed. Jimmy laughed.
Not any more.
We all laughed. I went upstairs and found the offending blanket. As I checked the plug top, I could overhear my life being discussed in the kitchen below.
Where's the lad from?
Tala.
Ooh, a Jackie, more or less. He's a good lad. Brains to burn, but he hasn't an ounce of sense. And he hasn't a clue about women either. Picks up with a new one every month or so, one flightier than the next. He'll grow out of it,
Mrs. Reedy said. When I replaced the main fuse, the single 100-watt bulb in the kitchen sparkled dully in the late morning sunshine.
God bless the walk, she said. Now sit down and have a drop of tea.
It'll have to be a quick one. We have to get to Rafferty's. He's a problem with his milking machine.
Rafferty's are at Cairn, the Land Commission people.
Her voice took on an edge.
They've done well for themselves lately.
Bloody right they have, said Jimmy.
When they came here first, we all helped them. Now since they got them fancy new cows, a Shara cow... Charolais, they're from France, Jimmy said. They give more milk, they say. Whatever they're called, all I know is the Raffertys have got awful uppity lately. They've time for nobody. Maggie passed me in the street with her nose in the air.
She calmed up, as if she'd said too much already. As we left, Jimmy asked her if she might know where the hunt might be.
Not around here. Not since the Germans bought Kelly's land. Mrs. Reedy's voice grew angry. They won't let them through. They won't let anybody through. They fenced off the whole place right down to the river. The English never even done that bad as they were. The hunt will have to cross the river at the old abbey. They'll be over British way by now.
We got into the van. The radio was crackling on Squelch. It was Mr. Gardner himself.
Pat, just got another call from Rafferty. He's afraid to start the milking. The sparking at the conduit joints. I heard he got that place wired on the cheap. Could you make it your next call?
Will do, Mr. Gardner, I said into the mouthpiece.
Let's do a quick detour through Sherlock's Town after the hunt, Jimmy said. It'll take no time.
At the cross of Sherlock's Town, we missed them. We saw the flash of red, heard the horns as they slid into the woods in hot pursuit.
Cut across me, Finnegan's, Jimmy said, hanging out the van window.
I put the pedal to the floor and sped down the Boreen. The climbers rattled in the back of the van. We hung a right at Finnegan's barn and right again at Clohane, gathering speed all the time. When we jumped Humpback Bridge at Sherlockstown, the ladders bounced on the roof. We saw him. He was scrambling up the embankment at the side of the road, steam rising from his silky, sweaty hide, froth oozing from his flared nostrils. As he struggled, I stopped the van. We stepped out. Although we were so close, we could almost touch him. He seemed to be unaware of our presence. At the top of the embankment, he stopped for a moment. He looked around, his movements jerky, his antlers majestic. Then he bowed his head, sniffing the ground. A trickle of blood ran across his right shoulder and down his leg, staining the brown earth. At one stage, he looked straight at me, his eyes startlingly bright, intelligent, terrified. From across the fields, the menacing sound of the pack drifted over the low hedges. Behind them, the urgent shrill of the hunter's horn. The stag bounded forward across Finnegan's 5 acres towards Hazelwood. He'd a slight limp. He wouldn't last much longer. Moments later, we were surrounded by beagles, swarming like locusts, yelping for blood. They picked up the scent as the first huntsman arrived, scampering up the embankment, tumbling down the other side. The lead huntsman glanced in our direction. It was Carling Stewart himself, proud, confident, master of hounds this year. He measured the embankment with his eye. For a moment I thought he was going to force his mare over it. Then he trotted over to a gate and a cutting.
I say, men, he called in our direction. Would you mind opening the gate?
I stood my ground. Maybe I didn't like his tone of voice. Maybe I was on the stag's side. Jimmy made a move to help. Fuck him, Jimmy, I said. Let him open his own gate. Jimmy dithered. The huntsman called again, this time more urgently, more authoritatively. Jimmy stepped forward, opening the gate with a loud clang. As he rode through, Carling Stewart dropped a coin on the ground. More huntsmen followed, the odd coin hitting the dirt. Suddenly, they were all through, galloping across the field, following the hounds towards a spot in Hazelwood where the stag had vanished. Jimmy knelt down and started collecting coins. They were mostly tanners, with the odd shilling thrown in for good measure. As we drove off, Jimmy was strangely silent. He passed me half his takings, but I refused. When he tried to push it into my pocket, I pushed his hand away angrily. The silence grew all the way to Rafferty's. There were several cars parked outside the farmhouse, among them the vet's Citroen and Mr. Gardner's Ford.
Jesus Christ, Jimmy said, as I swung the van into the yard. Jesus Christ Almighty!
They lay on their backs outside the cowshed, surrounded by mourners, their legs stiff in the air, their bulging udders obscenely exposed, their necks twisted at acute angles. Rafferty's prize Charolais. All six of them. When I got closer, I saw their tongues, half bitten through by their cud-chewing teeth, a sure sign of electrocution.